We welcome Dr. M. Zaher Salul, who is past president and senior advisor of the Syrian American Medical Society, a leading medical relief NGO in Syria and for Syrian refugees representing Syrian American healthcare diaspora. He's the co-founder of the American Relief Coalition for Syria. He's a critical care specialist from Chicago. He's authored many articles on the humanitarian and medical impact of the Syrian crisis. Dr. Salul.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you for inviting me. And I appreciate really this gesture from the Peace Caucus. I'm looking forward to be more engaged with your activities. Gaza and Palestine have a great spot in my heart. But today I'm going to be speaking about my homeland, Syria. I've been in Chicago for 25 years. I'm a practicing critical care specialist. This is a picture which I will start with, and I'm sure that many of you are familiar with this picture, right? Who is not familiar with this picture? Just raise your hand. All right. So I'll start with this statement from the United Nations, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that individuals have the right to a standard of living adequate for health and well-being. This is the picture which was taken in January 18th, 2014 in Al-Yarmouk refugee camp in Damascus, 5 kilometers from the center of Damascus. This is the largest refugee camp for Palestinians in Syria. It had, before the crisis, 150,000 Palestinians who lived with their neighbors. There are about 600,000 Syrians also who lived in this camp. Very peacefully, and this picture was taken after this camp was under complete siege by the government for at least 1 year, and UN UNRWA declared that they're going to bring convoy of food that day, and so people came out from what people did not believe, that there will be that large number of civilians still living in this mostly destroyed neighborhood, came out because they heard that there is food convoy coming. One of the women who was very weak to fight for her ration, she had malnutrition, she died on the spot. Many of the aid workers who were very experienced in delivering aid had to be canceled after they came back to Damascus. There's a statement from a resident of the Al-Yarmouk camp who lived in Damascus: in order to break the siege, we need first to break the silence surrounding it. This report, which was this presentation is based on, is issued by the Syrian American Medical Society, SAMS, in March of 2000 of this year. It's called Slow Death, Life and Death in Syrian Communities Under Siege. And if you follow this report, you will discover that Gaza is a heaven compared to what's happening right now in many areas in Syria. And also the torture in Syria is more rampant than what we've heard from the previous speaker. Caesar's picture showed that there's 30,000 people who were killed under torture in Syria. Only in the last month, 297 people were killed under torture. One of them was a physician from the city of Idlib. This is how it started. All of you are familiar with the Arab Spring, and people had a lot of hope in the beginning that there will be a change, positive change in Syria. The government responded with brutality, and then you know what happened. And right now, Syria is the worst humanitarian crisis in our lifetime. Every time we use a new figure in relation to the Syrian crisis, we say it is unprecedented. This is a quote from Valerie Amos, who is the past UN chief for humanitarian affairs. These are some of the numbers: 200,030 were killed, 1.5 million injured, 13.8 million in urgent need for humanitarian assistance. This is according to the last UN report, about 1.2 million above the previous estimate. 4.2 actually million registered refugees, 7.8 million IDPs, 4.7 million in hard to reach areas, 800,000 in besieged areas, 5.5 million children affected by the crisis. Many of them have no education for the past 2-3 years, the last generation. And also we are facing the disintegration of the public health care system in Syria. It's a regional crisis that affecting Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey, and of course it's affecting Europe. That's why you have more attention now towards Syria, because of the refugee crisis in Europe, not because of what's happening in Syria. And of course we have terrorism. So what is siege? Why is there a siege in Syria? And this is the UN Independent International Commission for Inquiry of the Syrian Arab Republic. And it says that as part of their strategy aimed at weakening the insurgents and breaking the will of their popular base, government forces besieged several localities, a strategy reinforced by prolonged shelling campaigns, Partial siege aimed at expelling armed groups turned into tight blockades that prevented the delivery of basic supplies, including food, medicine, and part of starvation until submission campaign. According to the last United Nations humanitarian report, which was just issued last week, only 0.5% of the population in areas under siege received food from the UN, 0.5%, and only 3.6% receive medical assistance. There is a difference between hard-to-reach areas and besieged areas, according to the UN OCHA. In Syria, there is 4.9 million people who are in areas that are hard to reach. It's difficult to get them medical supplies and humanitarian supplies regularly because of road blockade or fighting or bureaucracies. And there's areas under complete siege that you have consistent inability to deliver humanitarian assistance to these population. And civilians and the sick and the wounded cannot regularly exit the area. That's what I'm going to focus on. There is at least four main areas that are under siege in Syria. Al-Yarmouk camp was one of them, East Al-Ghouta and West Al-Ghouta near Damascus. Al-Wa'ar district in Homs, Al-Rastan and Talbisa north of Homs, these are the same areas that are shelled by the Russian military intervention in the last few weeks. Some areas in Aleppo and also Deir ez-Zor, which is under siege by ISIS. This is East Al-Ghouta and West Al-Ghouta. These are the main areas under siege by mostly the government troops. There is an estimate of about 500,000 people who are still living in these areas. Pre-crisis population is 2 million. 500,000, 42 hospitals and medical points in East Al-Ghouta, about 50,000 in Western Al-Ghouta, three hospitals, and 15,000 in south of Damascus, two hospitals. About 1,000 surgeries are done in East Al-Ghouta on a monthly basis, 800 newborns on a monthly basis, 50,000 primary care visits to the 42 medical points and hospitals, and 125 dialysis sessions monthly. Unfortunately, the dialysis sessions are shrinking because people who are in dialysis are dying because there's no dialysis kits. The last time that there was dialysis kits allowed to enter East Al-Ghouta was in May of this year after an intervention of the Russian government. How to enforce the siege? Siege occurs when armed forces completely surround a populated area, taking control of all roads and passable terrains, primarily enforced by installing checkpoints, and civilians are generally not allowed to leave the besieged areas and may be killed or arrested for trying to do so. So you're not allowed to leave the areas. In some areas in East Al-Ghouta, actually you can leave, but you have to pay $5,000 as a bribe to the checking point. So people can leave, either that they can expose to death, and many of the people who were able to leave East Al-Ghouta, they were sniped at and some of them were injured. Or you can bribe $5,000 if you have that amount of people money. As I mentioned, the impact of siege in Syria is huge. This is one of the old estimates, but according to the last report, only 0.5% of the population in East Al-Ghouta receive food ration. Vaccination rate is less than 25% of children under 5. 80% of pregnancy end with C-section, and you can ask yourself, why is that? And the reason is because people have no access to hospitals at night. So if a woman had to deliver with unplanned delivery, then she may not find a place to deliver. And that's why most women have C-sections, because they want to know that they can deliver at one point during the day when there is no bombing and so forth. Medical supplies are often removed from aid convoys by governmental security services, and the tactics of wars that we see on TV sometimes in other cities, in other areas in Syria, are done also in these areas under siege, which add to the suffering of the population because they cannot have the instrument to cope with the trauma related to war. These are some of the things that we detailed, the siege medical impact in this report. I have two copies of the report, but it's available online if you're interested. And I'm going to focus only on two things, the medical human resources. 55 physicians in East Al-Ghouta remained out of the more than 1,000 physicians before the crisis. So 90% or more of physicians left or had forced to flee. And these 55 physicians are serving 500,000 people. 400 total medical staff, including nurses, medical students, technicians, pharmacists, are remained. We have only few detailed specific specialties, subspecialties, one plastic surgeon, one thoracic surgeon, one vascular surgeon, one neurosurgeon for the 500,000. Point 11 medical professional per 1,000 of population is available in East Alota compared to 1.5 per 1,000 before the siege. The WHO recommends 2.3 per 1,000. We have an epidemic of infectious diseases. Many of them are waterborne diseases. The water purification process were destroyed by the government. And we have an epidemic of typhoid, hepatitis A, dysentery, shigellosis, salmonella, and gastroenteritis, epidemic of measles because of lack of vaccinations of most children. We had an epidemic of polio, not in East Alota, but in Deir Zor in northeastern Syria. And there was a campaign by WHO which vaccinated 2.8 million children. And luckily, we don't have polio cases this year and last year. We have an epidemic of multi-drug-resistant TB because TB was controlled by the government, epidemic of leishmaniasis because there's no garbage collections. And so we have a lot of fire fleas that transmit leishmaniasis. We have an epidemic of lice and scabies, hepatitis B and C because there's no control of blood transfusion. We don't know the numbers of HIV in Syria. You know this guy, and this is a picture from O'Hare Airport, that we were that close to eradicate polio a couple of years ago, and then we had the 25 cases, and people think that more than 25 cases were documented in Syria. And we have the same ingredients for another epidemic of polio in Syria if the situation continued to worsen. This is a study which was done by the Chinese that showed 83% of lights are out after 4 years of the crisis. So you can see cities like Aleppo at night that has no light compared to the previous pre-crisis. So today we are celebrating the third anniversary of no light in East Alota. Exactly 3 years of no light, 195 days without electricity. Many of the children that were born a few years before the crisis do not know what is light, do not know what is TV, do not know what is air condition. And this is only a few kilometers from the center of Damascus. These are some of the surgeries that are done on children using the iPhone, which was invented by Syrian American, by the way. Unfortunately, physicians have to do these surgeries sometimes with the flashlights. And this is a surgery that is done with the use of flashlights. Many of these doctors are untrained medical students that are the only doctors in town. So they have to do surgeries on patients because there's no one else who can do surgery using flashlight. Or this is one of the persons that, this is not from Auschwitz camp, this is from Al-Hajar al-Aswad, a neighborhood in Damascus under siege. These are pictures which we've never seen in Syria, malnutrition. There's documented in this report 570 people who died because of malnutrition in Syria in East Al-Ghouta. And this is an underestimate. This is a famous also picture that we've seen. In the same area that is under siege was also the center of chemical weapon attack in August 21, 2013. More than 1,400 people were killed, many of them were children. One of my friends who's an anesthesiologist told me that his hospital capacity was in Ain Tarma. Capacity is 20 beds, and he had 700 patients who are all suffocating. And he had to choose which patient he had to treat and which patient he allowed to die. And he said 144 people died that night, 66 of them were children. Until this day, when he wakes up in the morning, he knocks on the door of his children's room. He wants to make sure that they are breathing. Chemical weapon used 152 times in Syria since December of 2012. After the famous deal that was done by the Russians, there is 125 attacks of chemical agents, not sarin gas, but chlorine gas this time. Total people who were affected, more than 12,000, the casualties 16,000. This is a picture I took myself in northern Latakia. This is a displaced family, and this is an instruction on what to do when you are exposed to chemical weapon in Arabic. This is a decontamination tent in the city of Aleppo near one of the hospitals, and many of these hospitals in areas that are controlled by the armed groups have these decontamination tents, fear of chemical weapon. This is the impact of barrel bomb on one of the blocks. We've heard about the impact of barrel bombs in many areas in the city. This is the main cause of displacement and refugees in Syria. Barrel bombs, it's not ISIS. And this is the picture of a child. Many of the children have post-traumatic stress disorder and trauma and mutism. And when you ask them to draw pictures as part of art therapy, that's what they draw. They draw pictures of airplane throwing bombs, and you have amputated arms and legs and children crying. Tomorrow we're going to have a presentation about the impact of attacks on healthcare in Syria. This is Syria. What's happening in Syria is unique in terms of targeting physicians and killing physicians and attacking hospitals. This is one of the organizations that are tracking this, Physicians for Human Rights. 91% of the killing of physicians is done by the regime, 4.7% by ISIS, and 4.1% by rebels group. These are hospitals, makeshift hospitals underground. This is the only place that you can, this is the only way that you can save the patients and the doctors by doing these hospitals underground, 4 meters underground. This is one of the hospitals I visited in the city of Aleppo. I'm going to end actually with positive note. In spite of the siege, we are doing some training for the physicians in East Al-Ghouta. This is online training that we are doing, they are using batteries to run the internet in East Al-Ghouta. They are also transforming these bombs and shelling into arts. And they are using biofuel because there's no diesel fuel, so they use animal waste to produce biofuel to run the generators in the hospitals. This is a die-in which we staged last week in New York. We had more than 300 American physicians and medical students staging die-in to represent what's happening in Syria in solidarity with the Syrian healthcare professionals. Thank you very much.